How did you do on your Wednesday?
We are headed downhill toward the weekend. When I was walking into the building, one of the security guards at the front desk, or it's actually the back desk because we're now coming in the back way, but one of the security guards said to me, "How are you?" My response, I didn't think about it, it just came out of my mouth, "Closer to the end of the week than the beginning," which means I'm good. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on this Wednesday night, September 11th, 2024. I was a little later coming into the building because I stopped in multiple places in Lower Manhattan since our headquarters here at the Infinity Sports Network, Odyssey being our parent company. Our headquarters are located in Lower Manhattan, roughly 10 blocks north of the Freedom Tower, 10 blocks north of Ground Zero. And as I was driving down southbound along the Hudson River, which is what's called the West Side Highway, it traces along the western edge of the island of Manhattan, and it points directly to Ground Zero. So if you continued on the West Side Highway, you would end up essentially at the base of Ground Zero. And so, or at the base of the Freedom Tower near Ground Zero. So I was driving southbound and stopped a couple different places to take photos of the towers of light. Sometimes it's hard to see how brightly purple they are because of the other lights in Manhattan. But I think I got a couple photos that at least indicate how bright, how powerful, how far these lights stretch heavenward. So if you have never seen them, and maybe you have in other photos, these photos that I took, and I did share one on both of our social media sites. The photos that I took are from just a couple hours ago. The lights will continue to shine on into Thursday morning, September 12th, as they do. They shine for about 24 hours. And they are stretching skyward as far as the eye can see. And you can see them from all around. From 20 miles away, you can see them on a clear day. And it's relatively clear in New York City at this point. Earlier in the day, I shared a couple photos of the Twin Towers that I took when I was a kid. So I was a kid who was into Lower Manhattan on a field trip with one of my classes. And I remember taking these photos with a 35 millimeter camera, and they remain on my refrigerator. In fact, a couple years ago, I went in search of them because I knew I had them, but I wasn't sure where they were. So I went rifling through a bunch of photos. I know I also have photos from the observation deck, but I haven't been able to find those yet. These are the ones that I was able to find and retrieve from piles of photos. And I shared those earlier in the day. If you haven't seen them, you can check them out at A-Law Radio. But also now, the Towers of Light that continue to shine brightly throughout this night, just a few blocks from where we are. And I don't know how many of you spend time reflecting on the anniversary of 9/11. For the past 20 years, I have taken time on each of the anniversaries to watch at least one documentary. And there are times when the 9/11 anniversary falls on a weekend, and I will admit that I have spent in the past 6-7 hours watching documentaries. I don't know how many new ones there are in the last few years. There were a bunch of new documentaries that were done on the 20th anniversary, and now here we sit at 23. But I can always find one that I either haven't seen before or haven't seen in a long time. But even if I have watched it before and I remember it, I still take time to watch. And for the first time this year, I was watching with my husband. I don't think he's ever watched a 9/11 documentary, though he remembers where he was and how he saw what was happening in New York City. So it was an interesting experience to watch yet another one with him. And the one that, well, we saw a couple. One was called The Cloud of Dust, and it was a 5-part series that broke up the morning of 9/11, 2001, with the perspective of this cloud of dust. And it's not just what happened there at Ground Zero on that Tuesday morning. It's also about the people who worked on the pile and breathed in the dust and breathed in the asbestos and breathed in the toxins that were released once the buildings collapsed. And if you don't know this, I mentioned this to wrap up our show on Wednesday morning. There are more than 10,000 people who either lived or worked or served in Manhattan, down in the lower portion of the city, down on the pile or near the pile. You didn't even have to be working at the pile. But if you were near there, the air was so full of the toxins and the dust that there have been more than 10,000 people who've been diagnosed with 9/11 related illnesses. And there are now more people who have died from cancers and other 9/11 related diseases and illnesses than died on September 11th. So that tragedy, that worst terror attack in our nation's history, is still claiming lives. Again, now well over the number that actually died on that Tuesday, 2001. And so as we were watching this documentary, and one of them was called The Cloud of Dust, the other one was 9/11, I Was There. And it was a compilation. I'd seen it before, but not in a while. It was a compilation of documentaries or films that were made. Or remember the old camcorders? That's what people were using. It was perspective of all of these various videos that were pieced together from people who were either in buildings nearby or on the ground, or they went to Ground Zero as a journalist or just as an amateur filmmaker. All of these videos that were put together from various sources, and in each of the videos, they identified the people who were taking them. So they obviously had permission to use them and kind of told their story, but also told the story of 9/11 through their eyes. And there was one particular woman who was a journalist, and she had gone closer to the Twin Towers when they were still standing, but on fire, and the planes had already flown in. So she goes closer with her camcorder, one of those big video recorders, and she's walking toward what was, at this point, there was one building still standing. She gets close enough. The second one starts to come down. It starts to collapse. And she begins to run, isn't going to be able to outrun this cloud of dust and smoke and this, it was like a monster that you could see snaking around buildings and up through the streets, and it was coming so fast, and she wasn't going to be able to outrun it. And so she's trying to find her husband. They kind of got separated in the mess, and there was a coffee shop where the owners and a few patrons had taken refuge. They open the door and pull her in and say, get in here, get in here, get in here. And within seconds, the smoke, the thick smoke that you couldn't see through, completely enveloped the entire street where she was. And you couldn't see out the windows. And she was so grateful. Her camcorder's still running. And she kept saying over and over again, you saved my life. You saved my life. You saved my life. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. But you couldn't even see out the windows because that's how thick that smoke and that dust and the debris from these two buildings that collapsed within an hour of each other. And so as I was getting out of my car to take photos on what is a relatively clear night here in Lower Manhattan, and the towers of light are still reaching heavenward, and I'm walking on streets that 23 years ago were completely covered by debris and dust and dirt and paper. And it's just, it just really gripped me how different it looks tonight than it did exactly 23 years ago when the skies were not clear and the streets were covered. I've heard reports that the debris and the dust and the dirt in some places was 2 feet thick on the streets. And obviously for weeks, the air was not clear. And so if you have an opportunity, please check out the photo at A Law Radio as the towers of light will continue to reach skyward from ground zero through this night, marking the 23 years. I also put them up on our Facebook page after hours with Amy Lawrence. And if you haven't seen the photos of the Twin Towers from when I was a kid, these are precious to me now. As I say, I keep them on my refrigerator, not because I'll ever forget, but because I think it's important to have them out. It's after hours with Amy Lawrence, and it's our Wednesday last night before we get to week two of the NFL season. And so we have a lot to talk about as we prepare for, I guess, the next round to try to have our questions answered. We'll do that. We've heard from Deshaun Watson about the latest sexual assault allegation. We've heard from Tyreek Hill. Maybe a bit of introspection, maybe a bit of humility about what happened on Sunday before he got to the stadium there in Miami. We've heard from Christian McCaffrey, who did not play against the Jets. And now what happens for week number two with the Niners? Plus Aaron Rodgers, it's not quite R-E-L-A-X, but it's something along those lines. His advice to Jets fans. Okay, thanks, Aaron. It was one of those days where we had a ton of coaches and athletes speaking, getting ready for week number two. Also, Daniel Jones, he's not flummoxed by your heckling and your booing of him. Bring it. My goodness. Heat, I don't think I've ever said this when you and I have been together, but is he not a carbon copy of Eli Manning? In so many ways, he is just the next Eli.
That's probably why they liked him so much when they drafted him. I mean, that's an organization that's based on stability, and a carbon copy of Eli Manning was probably an appeal to them.
Right? He acts so much like him, even talks like him with that kind of monotone. I wonder if he will end up with that same sense of humor that comes out. Maybe someday he ends up with his own broadcast from Monday Night Football. But yeah, who knew? Well, other than people around Eli, his family, his friends, his wife, his kids, who knew he had such a hysterical sense of humor? But it really comes out, especially when he's making fun of his brother.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think sibling rivalry will always bring that out.
I mean, he's self-deprecating, too, which is really fun. He really does enjoy making fun of himself as much as he enjoys making fun of other people, specifically his brothers.
And the pressure's off. The pressure's off. You relax as anybody. They sit back, they relax, and they have more fun.
On Sunday morning, before the Giants kick off against the Vikings, I was listening to, so I just landed at the airport coming back from Dallas, and I turned on the local station, I don't even know which one, a New York local station that was talking about the Jets, and they actually had Eli on and were asking him questions about the season, blah, blah. But what I heard was a question about his Hall of Fame candidacy and wondering if he was nervous and how he was approaching it and how he was feeling. And of course he just said, I can't do anything about it now. My career is done. I can't increase my chances. I can't decrease my chances. I just will have to wait and see. And so that'll be interesting. I still believe he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, but if he's not a first ballot Hall of Famer, he's a second or third ballot Hall of Famer. There's no doubt in my mind that he gets in. But I thought his answer was really wise. I can't change it now. I'm not going to campaign for the Hall of Fame. I did what I did. I can't increase my chances. I can't decrease my chances. So there's no sense worrying about it. I thought that was really smart.
It is smart. There's nothing he can do about it. And I'm with you. I think he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. Two rings. I mean, he was one of the best quarterbacks in crunch time. So there's nothing he can do about it except sit back and relax and just be a professional like he always is.
Mm. And yet, I do love his sense of humor. I think Eli is far more appealing now that he's not playing football. I mean, on the field, he was great, but he was such a monotone, which is why he reminds me of Daniel Jones, or why Daniel reminds me of him, because they're not going to give you anything. And they actually sound alike, which is kind of funny. So we'll hear from Daniel Jones, but straight ahead, baseball has just about 2.5 weeks to go in its regular season. And we've got a few pursuits of history that we're tracking. Not Aaron Rodgers. That is what happens this time of the year when there's multiple sports going on. Aaron Judge is still looking for home run number 52. He is stuck on 51. Now, is that bad? No. 51 is incredible for a season, and he's done this before. So the fact that he's able to do it again is phenomenal. The Yankees are not hurting. They're not tanking or slipping backward because he's not hitting home runs. But what is happening, Shohei Ohtani is catching up to him. Now, they're different leagues, of course. There's two different MVPs. But in terms of the actual home run race for this 24 season, it's not as cut and dried as it was. And I also checked, last I looked, Bryce Harper did not have another home run either. So there's two guys right there who I know a lot of people are watching and waiting with bated breath. But you won't believe what the Dodgers did against the Cubs on Wednesday night. We had walk-offs, which is a lot of fun as well. And another no-hitter. This has happened multiple times this year. Another no-hitter taken into the ninth inning only to be broken up. So we'll get to all of the latest from the baseball diamond as well. You let me know when it's okay to start scoreboard watching.
I think now.
You think now?
Yes.
At A-Law Radio, After Hours with Amy Lawrence on Facebook. I'm so glad that you're with us. We're happy to keep you company. I hope that you did spend a couple minutes, if not more than that, reflecting on 9/11 and where you were at this time 23 years ago. But I highly recommend watching some of these documentaries. The one that I got into was 9/11, I Was There. And yeah, it puts you right back on the scene. And as I say, coming into Lower Manhattan tonight, it's jarring to think about what was happening here exactly 23 years ago tonight. Again, good to have you with us. I hope that you enjoyed your Wednesday as best you can. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Here's a 1-2. And Ohtani belts this one to right center field and deep. This one heading back. It's gone. A line drive out of here. Into the home run seats. An absolute laser beam for Shohei Ohtani. And it's home run number 47 for the big show. Shohei Ohtani. Oh, he lights up this crowd. It is a 2-1 score now. Ohtani is at 47 home runs and 47 stolen bases in the hunt for 50-50.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
On Dodgers radio, he actually finished the night with his 48th stolen base. And so we've got a Shohei Ohtani who is dangerously, perilously close to that 50-50 boundary that no man has ever surpassed when it comes to 50 home runs and 50 stolen bases in a single season. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Now, that was the start of the first inning for the Dodgers against the Cubs. Oh, they had more fireworks in store.
It's Tommy Edman. And his fourth career two-home run game, and he's lifted one deep to left. This ball heading back to the wall. It is gone! It's a home run for Edman! And the Dodgers have taken a 3-2 lead! Tommy Edman with his third home run in the last two games gets the Dodgers in front for the first time tonight. First round pick by the Cubs. Now Will Smith drills one deep to left. This ball's back. This ball's gone. The third home run of the inning for the Dodgers. And they lead it 4-2. Will Smith with home run number 18 on the season. Oh, majestic, towering shot to left. And the Dodgers have come out swinging the bats. 2-2 pitch. Swung on, hit high in the air to right. This ball's back. And the Dodgers, for the second time this year, have gone back to back to back in the first inning. The home run hat trick. Max Muncy, home run number 14. It is 5-2 Dodgers. Can you believe this?
Once again, the calls on the Dodgers radio network with Tim Neverett. Four home runs total in the first inning for the Dodgers, who actually were behind 2-0. After the top half of the frame, they were already in the hole against the Cubs, but were able to provide the pop to put them out in front, and ultimately 10 runs on a dozen hits. And this wasn't even Shohei Ohtani, Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, even Teoscar Hernandez, their top four, who've been so deadly this year. Now, this was Tommy Edman, their center fielder, who just had his second consecutive night with 2 home runs. This is Will Smith, their catcher, Max Muncy, who just got back into the lineup. But yeah, for Edman to be able to go deep twice in 2 consecutive games, well, that's pretty rare.
Obviously, we want him to.
That's not usually a huge part of my game, to be honest, but, you know, who knows? I'm feeling pretty good at the plate right now, and the last couple weeks have been really good for, you know, kind of getting my rhythm, my timing. So hopefully I can keep this this momentum going.
Yeah. Do you know he has all of 4 home runs? 2 on Tuesday and 2 on Wednesday. That's not what he normally does. As you hear, is that Sportsnet LA? Just want to make sure that I give credit.
Correct.
As for the 50-50 and that pursuit of 50 home runs and 50 RBI, we know that already it's a career high in home runs for Shohei Ohtani. Are his teammates rooting for him? Here's Max Muncy.
Obviously, we want him to get there because that means he's doing good. It's helping our team out if he gets there. So, you know, he's unbelievable. Every night I feel like he does something that we haven't seen. You know, tonight he hits a ball, 118, that I feel sorry for the fan that tried to catch it. you know, it was he's just, everything he does is so impressive. So it's fun to be a part of it.
Yeah, imagine what he could do offensively in terms of career numbers if he only hit the ball, if he didn't pitch. And I've said this before, part of why I think he's so productive this season, even more than he has been in the past, is because he's only hitting. He's obviously got more energy. He's getting more sleep. There's less prep because he's not preparing to face a lineup of hitters every fifth day. He's not worried about throwing off a mound or getting in his bullpen work, though he is starting to throw. But the mental and physical preparation to do both, to pitch and to hit on a daily basis, that's overwhelming. And so we had heard from him at last year's All-Star game, I think, when he was asked about the preparation that goes into it. He says he sleeps a lot. He does not take BP. And I don't know if that also includes this year, but in the past, he's not taken batting practice because he doesn't have time, which is pretty incredible considering his numbers that he doesn't take BP or in the past. I'm not sure if it's different this year because he isn't pitching. But when he gets back to pitching, and the Dodgers do want him to pitch, they're paying him $700 million ultimately. They do want him to pitch. But how much better he would be at one or the other if that's all he did. So the Dodgers are able to salvage this game against the Cubs. Cubs had been teeing off on their pitching. So they're at 87 wins, while the Phillies are at 88 wins. They've won 8 of their last 10. They put some distance between themselves and the other contenders in the National League East. And right now, the Dodgers back to the Diamondbacks is 5 games. That's actually the closest race in the NL. It's really the wild card races that you're going to want to watch moving forward. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We mentioned a no-hitter. It was brewing. People were getting excited. The Blue Jays, They were so close against the New York Mets.
0-2. Hit high in the air. Deep right field. Lindor swings and sends it out to tie the game and deliver heartbreak to the Blue Jays. Francisco Lindor in the ninth has tied the game up at one, ripping the no-hitter up and putting the Mets on the board with their first hit and their first run. Swinging a drive in the air to center and deep. Varsho racing back. He looks up. This one is gone! Oh, there's that titanic power from Francisco Alvarez to double the lead. A three-run bomb straightaway center. 6-1 Mets.
So the Mets turn this into a potential no-hitter by the Blue Jays. And then six runs before you know it. So it goes from being nothing to everything. And they rally past Toronto. But talk about heartbreak. The no-hit bid ending in the ninth inning. And Francisco Lindor, he plays the role of spoiler. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Not sure if you know this, but Bowden Francis, he was in the same position in his last start, wasn't he? Or recently? I'm trying to think when that was. I'll go back and look at the dates. But yeah, nearly 30,000 people on their feet in Toronto, and he actually has an 0-2 count on Francisco Lindor. But it was a fastball that didn't have a ton of velocity on it. It was down to 92, and Lindor drilled it. And here's maybe part of the reason why. That pitch, the 111th of the game for him. It's only the second time in his career he's ever gone over 100. So you can imagine he was tiring. We'll have to hear from him at some point. But yeah, Francisco Lindor, big jerk, big meanie, spoiling this history.
100%, yeah. And I just looked in the dugout like, come on, yes. You know, like, it's winning baseball. It's time to win baseball games, you know. And coming up to Toronto and facing good pitchers and ended up with two wins, that's a good start to a road trip.
Yeah, okay, I just found it. Francis, the first pitcher to lose two no-hit bids in the ninth inning in one season since Nolan Ryan back in the late 80s. It wasn't his last start. It was, I think, in the last couple weeks. So it goes back to late August. So he'd had a handful of starts, but twice in these four starts, he's lost a no-hitter on a leadoff home run in the ninth.
That's an accomplishment in and of itself to
it
have
is.
That.
It is, just to be able to take a no-hitter into the ninth twice this deep in the season is really impressive, to be sure. But also heartbreaking, and mostly the Blue Jays don't get the win. Now, they are basement of the American League East, and way too many teams between them and a wild card, not to mention they're 9.5 out. But their hopes really rest on playing spoiler for other teams, and instead it was the Mets who got the last laugh. Now, because of the Mets, the Braves, the Padres, and how locked in they are, it's going to be a salty National League wild card race. But as it currently goes, Diamondbacks and Padres have the top two spots. The Mets have leapfrogged over the Braves, but it's only a margin of just one game. And the Cubs are back in this race as well because of how they've done recently. Their offense has been just spectacular. 855-212-4227. That's our toll-free line. Had a couple of photos up, photos from 9/11 and before 9/11, roughly 10 years before 9/11. Those are photos I took myself, and they're on both of our social media sites, A-Law Radio and our Facebook page. Coming up, Deshaun Watson answers questions about the latest sexual assault allegation. And Tyreek Hill, maybe some humility about what happened on Sunday. Here's our latest sports update, and here's Pete McCarthy.
Infinity Sports Network, Sports Flash.
Miami, the support is sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Protect your family, your phone, and your furry friends with Life Electronic Device and Pet Health Insurance. The Pac-12 is raiding the Mountain West. Boise State, Colorado State, San Diego State, and Fresno State have all been approved for membership, beginning with the 2026-27 academic year, according to Yahoo. Those four will join Oregon State and Washington State, the lone two holdovers from last year's mass exodus from the Pac-12. Shohei Ohtani is heading towards becoming baseball's sole member of the 50-50 club. Ohtani, not only with his 47th home run, but also his 48th stolen base. Ohtani with one of four first-inning home runs for the Dodgers. They beat the Cubs 10-8. Some dramatic finishes elsewhere. The Red Sox walk off the Orioles 5-3 on a Tyler O'Neill blast in the 10th. The Yankees also went to extras.
2-1. Jazz grounds it. Diving stop lit. Throw to the plate. Not in time. It's wide. Birdie scores. Jazz Chisholm wins the game. And the Yankees walk off the Royals 4-3-11.
Yankees radio, the Yanks move to a game and a half ahead of the Orioles. Twins beat the Angels. Tigers win a fourth straight. The Mariners pick up a game on the Astros. Braves fall to the Nationals while the Mets staved off a no-hitter and rallied to beat the Blue Jays. The Mets a game ahead of the Braves for the final wild card spot in the NL. Browns quarterback Deshaun Watson strongly denied the sexual assault and battery allegations that were filed in a lawsuit this week through his attorney, Rusty Hardin. WNBA, Asia Wilson breaks the single-season scoring record. Wilson leaded the Aces to a win over the Fever. Wilson on her teammates.
Just selfless women. They give it their all every single day, and they're their pure selves, and that's what I love the most, and I'm trying not to get emotional. But, like, my teammates are the ones, they're the heartbeat.
I'm Pete McCarthy.
855-212-4227. That's the number to get in touch with us, the Infinity Sports Network. Give us a call, 855-212-4227.
We'll let due process play out and follow the NFL's guidelines. We are 100% focused on Jacksonville, 100% focused on going on the road against a good football team, trying to find a way to get a W.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
The voice of Kevin Stefanski, head coach of the Cleveland Browns, as if it wasn't tough enough to come off that loss to Dallas at home and know that you've got so much to work on. Still don't have Nick Chubb, though they got a fair amount of work from Jerome Ford. But the defense getting all kinds of nicks and scrapes and cuts and bruises courtesy of the Dallas Cowboys. It's the defense that you would think that they could rely on without any issues, but really a tough first game out of the gate. And then right on the heels of that, and I can't explain the timing, but another civil lawsuit accusing Deshaun Watson of sexual assault and battery. In this case, not a massage therapist, but a woman, single mom, who lives in the Texas, Houston area, who lives in Texas, and said that she was on a date with him, a dinner date at her home, and he assaulted her without her consent. And that it not only was something that she felt so afraid that she grabbed a piece of heavy decor to chase him out of her apartment. But she said it was also demeaning the way he treated her even before that, yelling at her about her being late, or I get maybe, or maybe he couldn't find the apartment, something along those lines, just the way that he treated her. Now, this is all according to her lawsuit. And this goes back to 2020. So I do not understand the timing. I don't know why now. I don't know what she's asking for, what she wants, or if it even moves forward. Don't know anything other than what she's put in that suit. But we did finally hear from Deshaun on Wednesday, and he had released through his reps a statement. And now remember, his attorney is Rusty Hardin, who represented Watson in the case of all of those civil suits that were filed by the massage therapist. And Rusty Hardin wrote that Deshaun strongly denies the allegations in the Jane Doe lawsuit filed Monday. We have asked him not to comment further while this matter works its way through the courts, but are comfortable he will ultimately be vindicated.
The statement is the response that, you know, we talked about, and, you know, everything that he put in that statement is exactly what, you know, how I'm feeling and what we're going, you know, through this process with.
Did you have any idea that this lawsuit was coming when you were on the, when you were playing Sunday?
No, sir. I found out exactly whenever everyone else found out.
Now, the NFL, of course, is reviewing the lawsuit as much as the league can investigate. And they certainly have contacts and they've got people in law enforcement who will help them. No doubt the legal system as well, who will give them evidence in some cases, or at least give them a heads up about what might be available or what's coming. But they do not have subpoena power. They can't force this Jane Doe, as she's called, to speak to them personally. They can't force Deshaun Watson to do it either, though he did acquiesce to speak to them in the wake of all of the civil suits that were filed by the massage therapist. And ultimately, they did suspend him for 11 games, even though those were all civil suits and they were all primarily settled except for just the one that's still outstanding. But he got an 11-game suspension in that case. He did agree to drop any right to appeal. And we know that there was a bit of a negotiation going on. There was, behind the scenes, no doubt, between the NFLPA and the league offices and Deshaun's camp, a negotiation that would try to make this palatable for all parties involved. But now here comes another case. And so what about the league investigating him again and potentially coming after him again?
I haven't had any thought. Honestly, my focus is, again, is just being figuring out, you know, Jacksonville's plan on defense and focusing on my craft to be the best quarterback I can be on Sunday for this team. You know, that's something that, you know, the NFL has to, you know, do on their time. And, you know, I have to focus on what's in front of me right now.
And he will start on Sunday against the Jacksonville Jaguars. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We'll start to sprinkle in some of the week two headlines. Even as we work our way through this show, we're excited for the first time to welcome NFL Network Chief National Reporter Steve Weisch, top of the hour, joining us from Los Angeles to talk about not just the games that are coming up, some of the games that I have on my radar. Of course, we'll be talking about every game Sunday night. Don't you worry. We're not going to leave any of the games out. That's our pledge to you. However, a couple of the ones that already are sparking major interest, like what we've got Thursday night, Bills and Dolphins. And the Dolphins, no doubt, will be thrilled to focus on football. It's a short work week for them, but they've had a lot on their plates. A lot of them, along with the coaches, have been talking about what happened with Tyreek Hill, the traffic stop, which, by the way, we don't know exactly how fast he was going because he was pulled over based on an eye test, essentially. Do you know how often people want the NFL to determine whether a ball has been caught just based on the eye test? Become so ridiculous with all these various rules and the bobbling, and did he secure it, and stopping the film and narrowing it down frame by frame, and people will say, what about the eye test? That looks like a catch. If it looks like a catch and smells like a catch and feels like a catch and sounds like a catch, well, it's probably a duck. Just kidding. It's probably a catch. Well, in this case, the police officer was using the eye test to determine that Tyreek Hill was speeding. So we don't actually know. I've seen the estimations. He was going 60 in a 40, or roughly 60 in a 40. So 20 miles per hour over the speed limit. In various jurisdictions, you go too fast over a speed limit and you're actually susceptible to being cited for reckless driving as well, which is part of the claim against him. Anyway, we've seen the body cam footage now, and Tyreek Hill, while he's not backing down on what he thinks the officer should have to face in the wake of Sunday. He is admitting that maybe he could have done things differently.
I'm human. I gotta follow rules. I gotta, you know, do what, you know, everyone else would do, you know. So now, does that give them the right to literally beat the dog out of me? Absolutely not. But at the end of the day, I wish I could go back and, you know, do things a bit differently.
So my reaction to that, number one, is I thought his choice of words, I have to do what everyone else does, was interesting, because he's the one that stood there on Sunday and said, what if I wasn't Tyreek Hill? Meaning, what if I wasn't famous? What if I wasn't a really rich football player? Then what would have happened? And his implication, at least as a lot of fans interpreted it, I would have been treated far worse. What if I wasn't Tyreek Hill? And then he comes back and says, I should act like everyone else does. Meaning, I shouldn't act like I'm someone special. I should act like the average citizen who would get pulled over. So it's kind of a strange dichotomy when you hold it up together. He's saying, what if I wasn't a celebrity, but I probably shouldn't act like a celebrity or act like I'm special. Then he goes on to say that he literally had the dog beat out of him. That to me is misleading. I don't like the force that the particular officer used. I think it was excessive. It was unnecessary. And it was just a really bad use of authority and power. It was over the top. And I do believe that officer should be reprimanded, if not suspended. I don't know what the Miami-Dade Police Department will do. But to say he literally beat the dog out of me, Tyreek didn't get beaten up. He didn't get kicked. I don't know where Drew Rosenhaus got that. Unless, Pete, if you saw him get kicked and I just didn't on the footage that I watched, I did not see him get kicked.
I did not see him get kicked.
So maybe there is something else there that I haven't seen. But he definitely is not backing off of his claim that this officer should have the book thrown at him.
Gone. He got to go, man, because in that instant right there, like, not only did he treat me bad, you know what I'm saying? He also treated my teammates with, you know, disrespect. You know, he had some crazy words towards them, and they ain't even do nothing. Like, what did they do to you? They just walking on the sidewalk.
We'll see what happens, like I say, with the Miami-Dade Police Department. It definitely was not a situation that was de-escalated. It was the opposite, where it was escalated very quickly. But I appreciate at least that Tyreek is examining his own actions and his own response and admitting that he could have handled that situation differently. It was kind of funny, too. I don't know if you heard this, Pete, but he mentioned, when it comes to football, we watch tape. We watch tape to know what we need to do differently, to know how we need to improve. And it was kind of a nod to, hey, I've watched the tape, and now I know what I need to do to improve and how I need to handle things differently. All right, coming up, Steve Wyche of NFL Network, Chief National Reporter, will join us. We'll start to look ahead to week 2. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.